Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Andrew Honecke. This week, International Fresh Produce Association CEO Kathy Burns joins the show to discuss ag labor and new state packaging laws. Plus, Troy Bredenkamp with the Renewable Fuels Association and Krista Swanson with the National Corn Growers Association discuss the concerns their organizations have with Brazil. But first, here are this week's headlines. John Deere struck a deal with the Federal Trade Commission to end the right to repair antitrust lawsuit. Under the agreement, Deere agreed to make the same repair tools used by its dealers available to farmers and independent repair shops on fair and reasonable terms under a proposed settlement filed Wednesday. The equipment manufacturer also agreed to make available tools for reading and resetting electronic fault codes, reprogramming electronic components, restarting machines following emissions-related shutdowns, viewing technical manuals, troubleshooting solutions, and making other repairs available for farmers and independent repair shops. The agreement, if approved in the Illinois Northern District Court, would last for 10 years. China's appetite for purchasing soybeans is up. In good news for American farmers, Chinese exporters bought 472,000 metric tons of U.S. soybeans, marking the largest sale in months. USDA's announcement briefly sent soybeans above $12 a bushel on Wednesday morning. It marks the largest daily flash sale of U.S. soybeans since January, according to StoneX. Deputy Ag Secretary Stephen Vaden said in June that China, the world's biggest ag importer, is on track to live up to an agreement to buy 25 million metric tons of U.S. soybeans this year and next. House Ag Committee Chairman G.T. Thompson introduced the Save Agriculture's Workforce Act last week. We asked International Fresh Produce Association CEO Kathy Burns about how the fresh produce sector could benefit.
We are very supportive of what GT Chairman Thompson introduced last week, specifically as it relates to specialty crops. As you know, specialty crops are very labor intensive and time sensitive. So if you think about us needing the right workers at the right time, because if we don't have that, food ends up getting left in the field, supplies tighten, opportunities are lost, and worse yet, there's increased cost to the consumers because of all those factors. So the good news is this is a policy that can be addressed. And as you saw with Chairman Thompson's introduction last week, this is something that we certainly can get behind and really hope that after nearly four decades of Congress not being able to address the growing labor crisis in agriculture, that this will give us a fighting chance. I think as I look about the impact to our industry specifically, you know, agriculture writ large, 50% of ag labor lacks legal work authorization. 50%, that's huge. The H2A program supports 15% of our hired ag work labor, yet it's only 15%, you say, but it has grown 185% over the last 10 years. So it's a growing and important part of being able to support our farmers. About 2.5 million people work in the agriculture community, but 22 million work across the supply chain. And as I mentioned, as labor, if we have labor shortages, that's going to ultimately increase food costs.
Yeah, something else that this bill does too that's important, it expands eligibility to greenhouse and controlled environment agriculture. That means, you know, some sectors like mushroom production would be eligible for the first time. How significant is that change as more produce is grown indoors?
Yeah, I think obviously we need all the necessary growing methods to be able to meet the demand and the future demand of consumption of fresh fruits and vegetables. You know, only 1 in 10 Americans eat the recommended amount of fruits and vegetables. That means 90% of this country are not eating the recommended amount. In order to meet that demand, future demand, as we continue to grow consumption in this country, we're going to need all different growing methods. So as you mentioned, controlled environment agriculture being part of the H2A program will be very helpful to that part of our industry. The administrative processing component that the Act also supports is also very important. We need more streamlined processes in order to get this over the finish line and to get workers into the fields. And then the last area that we are particularly supportive of is just controlling costs. Outside just labor costs, all the incremental costs that are associated with the H2A program. Northwest Hort did a survey back in 2024, and 10% of the labor costs were over the overall revenue for apples. So if you look at apples, if you look at the amount that they were spending on labor, it was 110% of their revenue. That didn't even include input costs and all the other costs associated with growing apples. So said another way, for every acre that apples were being grown and produced and shipped and sold, those growers were actually losing money. That is not a viable business model for the long term.
We'll be back with more Newsmakers right after this.
As a cooperative, our customers are our owners. They share our profits and help guide our business. We're not just another lender. We're Farm Credit, and we're here for you.
Some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources. This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. Several states, including California, have enacted or are implementing extended producer responsibility laws that shift the cost of recycling packaging from local governments to producers of consumer products. We asked Kathy Burns with the International Fresh Produce Association how this impacts the produce sector and what actions their members are asking the federal government to take.
Andrew, I'm so glad that you brought this up. This is a key regulatory issue that has surfaced for our industry, and it's significant. As you mentioned, it's really addressing end-of-life management costs, and we're shifting those costs to producers, to brand owners, to distributors in a way that's going to ultimately filter itself down to the supply chain and once again provide some headwinds to consumers. It will end up ultimately raising prices for consumers. Right now, what's happening, as you mentioned, in California, Oregon, there's other states that are they're putting their own regulations in place. So can you imagine having different types of packaging in different states and the impact that that's going to have on the fresh produce supply chain? And I think what's really important to highlight here is that packaging isn't just a marketing tool. I think sometimes people see it as a marketing tool, but it impacts food waste, it impacts food loss, it impacts quality. If you think about FSMA and the FSMA implementation that's right on the horizon, compliance to FSMA requires packaging for a lot of our products. Traceability, you know, I'm not sure how you're going to trace some of our products if it's not in a package. And then labeling, if you go all the way back to country of origin labeling many, many years ago, there's a requirement for that. And in many cases, if you don't have a PLU sticker, you're going to need packaging to be able to do that. So it is a significant headwind that, quite frankly, is not getting enough attention. What our ask is, you ask, what are we planning on doing about it as an industry? IFPA is really advocating for guardrails for food loss, food waste, and FSMA compliance and implementation. So things like recyclability standards, compostable standards. We also need novel materials so that we preserve the functional performance of our products. Right now, because of EPR regulations that are different in different states, what's happening is some of the greener materials are heavier. And so it's actually costing producers more in to be able to ship those products into particular states. That just makes zero sense. If you think about you're trying to improve sustainability of packaging and the end of life of packaging, and we've invested a lot as an industry to come up with new innovative packaging for our industry to be able to support. And if now we're getting taxed on that in particular states, again, those costs are going to end up being driven down to the consumer at a time where we need people eating more fruits and vegetables, not less.
I have one last question for you before we go. The International Fresh Produce Association members are going to be in D.C. on the Hill next week. Walk us through the priorities that are going to be talked about during those visits.
Yeah, it's a very active time for our members. Obviously, they were here last week with Chairman Thompson's release of his Workforce Act. Next week, we'll also be in town addressing things like nutrition and ensuring that, I mean, consumption is also a huge priority for us. As I mentioned in my earlier statistics, there's a big gap between how much we are eating and how much we should be eating, and to ensure that federal programs are supportive of our dietary guidelines. And then we're getting funding necessary across the whole spectrum, everything from early eating with children all the way to our veterans. And we're continuing to lobby for things like that. We will continue to reinforce Chairman Thompson's Labor Act and Workforce Act, and to ensure that our voice is strong as it relates to that. As we just discussed, EPR will certainly be a topic of conversation. Farm Bill. The time is now on the Farm Bill as well. So with Chairman Bozeman's release, we hope during markup, we have a few tweaks that we'd like to see, especially on the nutrition front, and crop insurance, quite frankly. So we want to make sure that that gets its due attention. Food safety is always top of mind for our industry. So we will be continuing to lobby for increased investment in food safety and the right relationship between the industry and certainly FDA and CDC. It is our intention to be at every table where food is being discussed. And if we are not invited, we'll bring up a folding chair.
We'll be back with more newsmakers, but first, Grace Miller looks at extended producer responsibility legislation by state in this week's Map It Out.
This map shows packaging EPR activity across the United States. Extended producer responsibility shifts the cost of managing packaging waste from taxpayers to companies. The International Fresh Produce Association says this expanding patchwork creates new costs and burdens across the fresh produce supply chain, where margins are already razor thin. Fresh produce is uniquely sensitive to packaging changes because packaging is essential for preventing food waste, ensuring food safety, maintaining traceability, and preserving product access. For AgriPulse, I'm Grace Miller.
I've worked at Coca-Cola for 21 years.
We're delivering Dr. Pepper from our brand new facility in Dallas, Texas.
We're really proud to still make Pepsi products in America.
You don't need a college degree to work here, but I put 4 kids through college by working here.
This is a great place to work with great people and great American brands.
Grocery stores, convenience stores, restaurants, they all depend on us.
We deliver great paying jobs.
We deliver beverages people love.
We deliver for our community.
For 35 years, soybean farmers have invested together to build demand for U.S. soy at home and around the world. Through the Soy Checkoff, farmers turn every dollar into stronger markets for U.S. soybeans, driving innovation and partnerships across feed, food, fuel, sustainable production, and beyond, led by farmers and built to last. U.S. Soy, 35 years of delivering value back to the farm and investing in the future of agriculture.
Welcome back. The National Corn Growers Association released a report showing that American farmers are among the most productive in the world, yet are competing from a high-cost position. Krista Swanson joins us to walk through that report.
First of all, the big highlight of this report is that it puts real data behind what farmers have been feeling in their budgets for a long time. Part of the reason that this came about was because last fall, NCGA put together an inputs cost task force to dive into issues like this. And one of the first things growers said is, you know, they feel this. And we wanted to find data and see if the data backed that up. And it did. And I think to even a bigger extent than what maybe we were thinking going into it. So, you know, what are some of those big takeaways? The data, we worked with Kinetic, who's like a global research firm. They collect, these are based on farmer surveys, thousands of growers in both the US and Brazil. They have a very robust database of seed and crop protection, data to look at here. And so the price that farmers are paying for corn seed in the U.S. was 68% higher than Brazil. We were looking at a 2023 to 2025 period. Some fungicide comparisons were more than double Brazilian prices. Many of the herbicides were also at double. corn insecticide at 87% higher over that same period. And, you know, I think one of the other big takeaway here is that, you know, it's not necessarily the result of any one-on-one comparison. You know, it's hard to make those types of comparisons on global products. The big thing here is that it was consistent and it was big, no matter how you look at it.
Yeah, let's talk more about Brazil. You know, they become the U.S.'s biggest competitor in those global grain markets. How much does this input cost advantage strengthen Brazil's position?
Yeah, so, I think it definitely strengthens their position. You think about, you know, I guess one of the things that we're hearing maybe from some of the input companies is that the reason for this is because they're pricing based on production value or the expected returns. But, you know, that's certainly putting U.S. farmers at a disadvantage where they're basically paying a premium because they're the most productive and efficient and using fewer inputs. And so, you know, it brings into question a lot of things about the competitiveness in the global marketplace and the fact that we're all producing a commodity that we're selling into the global market.
Yeah, something else the report points to, you know, market structure, product availability, product mix. Does this suggest American farmers simply don't have the same level of competition among suppliers?
I think that can be part of it. You know, a lot of the suppliers, though, are global, you know, manufacturers, and they're providing products throughout the market. You know, certainly this indicated that a larger share of what Brazilian farmers are buying is not among the top five global manufacturers' products, indicating some of those, you know, a bigger share of generics being purchased there, and more availability of those, you know, single product type of things versus in the U.S., more of the premium branded types of premixes. So, yeah, there seems to be some differences in markets. And, you know, one of the other things here is U.S. farmers, they can certainly recognize that some of these products do have some added value. And so, you know, I want to be clear about saying that there's that. But part of the problem is when there's not price transparency on these types of things, it's hard to figure out where there is a premium being paid for a value-added product and where there's a premium being paid for, you know, just added costs. And so, you know, that's one of the things that we're calling for in this.
We'll be back with more Newsmakers right after this.
I've worked at Coca-Cola for 21 years.
We're delivering Dr. Pepper from our brand new facility in Dallas, Texas.
We're really proud to still make Pepsi products in America.
You don't need a college degree to work here, but I put 4 kids through college by working here.
This is a great place to work with great people and great American brands.
Grocery stores, convenience stores, restaurants, they all depend on us.
We deliver great paying jobs.
We deliver beverages people love.
We deliver for our community.
America never stops. Thanks to the financial support of Farm Credit, neither do the farmers and ranchers who call her home. Since the beginning, we've been helping rural America show the world what hard work can achieve. But the job is far from over. And as rural America grows further, we'll be there.
Welcome back. The Renewable Fuels Association testified in the U.S. Trade Representative's Section 301 hearing on Brazil. We asked Troy Brettenkamp about the highlights from the testimony.
Well, I think the most important thing is that RFA brought support for the U.S. position in bringing the case. We used to have a robust trade relationship with Brazil. It was one of our best trading partners when it came to an ethanol sector. And over the last decade or so, it has really degraded into almost being non-existent for a host of reasons. And we finally broke through with the Trump administration as to why. There are several factors that have led to that. And the USTR saw the light and they brought the 301 case and brought a determination that there needs to be a reciprocal tariff applied. And that's what the hearing was all about. And we're in strong support of the U.S. position in that case.
Yeah, I want to piggyback off that reciprocal tariff. You know, you guys asked the Trump administration to move forward with a 25% tariff on those Brazilian imports. Why is right now the best time to escalate this dispute with Brazil?
Well, when you look at what's happening globally, you know, there is a market boom happening within the ethanol sector. It's certainly in Brazil, you know, they are ramping up ethanol demand through higher and higher demand requirements within their own country. So there is a market access issue within Brazil. They need more volume coming into that country. We could certainly help fill that. And so when you're looking at just global positioning, we want to make sure that there is fair and free trade going on amongst the two largest ethanol producers within the world. So that's a huge factor. And also, you know, we have an abundance, a surplus of ethanol here at home, certainly feedstocks. And so when we see an opportunity to create more export markets, including one of our historical trading partners in Brazil, we certainly want to make sure that we're taking every opportunity to reestablish that trading opportunity. And that's what we see this 301 case being.
And you argue that Brazil has effectively shut American ethanol out of its market. How much business has the American industry actually lost because of these policies?
Well, they really have. You know, when you look at what has historically been done, we had, like I said, we had a very robust trading relationship with them. They were one of our largest exporters. Now our largest exporting partner would be Canada. It has really gone down to almost non-existent. So from a robust relationship to almost non-existent, if you look at just the 2023 numbers, we sold a mere $43 million worth of ethanol into Brazil, which is just couch cushion change. I mean, it's really nothing. So it really has had a very dampening effect on that trade relationship. And that is something that we want to see being restored through this 301 case and through this reciprocal tariff opportunity.
I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about Brazil's Renova Bio program.
Yeah.
What is that, and why should American farmers, ranchers, and the industry as a whole be paying attention to that?
Well, and that's certainly been weighing into this whole structure with this trade relationship. When you look at the Renova Bio program, you know, they brought that on in 2020. It was something that the country of Brazil put forward as a way to decrease, you know, their carbon intensity. So, I mean, on its surface, it's a good program. What has happened, though, is that there's a certification step that has to happen. All biofuel producers have to be certified through the Renova Bio program, and the 300 Brazilian ethanol producers have been certified. There is not a single U.S. ethanol producer that has been certified through that program. So right there, you can see where that would be a massive trade barrier limiting program. And that was one of the other things that our testimony brought out was that the Renova Bio program, the way it has been implemented, with the fact that not a single U.S. ethanol producer has been certified under that program, is a trade limiting, certainly a massive barrier to free trade within that space, and another reason why we're supportive of this 25% reciprocal tariff happening.
We'll be back with more Newsmakers, but first, Grace Miller looks at U.S. honey consumption in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
This chart shows per capita honey consumption from 1990 to 2025. In 1990, the average American ate just over a pound of honey a year. But today, honey is all the buzz. Consumption climbed to 2 pounds per person in 2024 and held close at 1.9 pounds in 2025. USDA says the trend reflects both population growth and higher per person use. Imports now supply 78% of the honey Americans consume, led by shipments from India, Argentina, Brazil, and Vietnam. For AgriPulse, I'm Grace Miller.
For 35 years, soybean farmers have invested together to build demand for U.S. soy at home and around the world. Through the Soy Checkoff, farmers turn every dollar into stronger markets for U.S. soybeans, driving innovation and partnerships across feed, food, fuel, sustainable production, and beyond, led by farmers and built to last. U.S. Soy, 35 years of delivering value back to the farm and investing in the future of agriculture.
I was kind of known as the sheep guy around here. The fire went from north to south and it blew that way and it went straight down the house. Lost all of our sheep literally a week before we were to start lambing. And I was really in a bad place. I happened to notice this farm state of mind piece of paper. And I picked up my cell phone and I made a phone call, and that was the best phone call in my life. I'm glad that I'm still here. So don't do something permanent over a temporary situation.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Both the House and Senate are in session next week, and USDA's crop progress report will be released Monday. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.